Welcome to Subject to Interpretation. I'm your host, Maria Ceballos Wallace. In today's episode, we have a distinguished guest with a wealth of experience in the field, Elizabeth Gwinley Salter, a seasoned medical interpreter and translator who started her career in Australia, where she earned her Master's of Arts in Translation from Macquarie University in Sydney. She is a NATI certified professional translator into English and Spanish, and that would be the National Accreditation Authority for Translators and Interpreters in Australia, as well as a Certified Medical Interpreter, an NBCMI. Elizabeth's journey has taken her from Yale New Haven Hospital to Stanford Healthcare Center, and her commitment to interpreter wellness and patient safety has made her a sought-after speaker on preserving and protecting interpreter health. So thanks for tuning in, because we're going to shed some light on important aspects of the relationship between hearing and voice health that we hope will resonate with interpreters worldwide. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much, Maria. That's a very warm welcome. I really appreciate it. Yes, I'm very excited about being here and talking about a topic that, doesn't always get the same airtime as perhaps some of the other hot topics of today, but equally important for our wonderful, hardworking, and they are all hardworking interpreters and translators out there.
And so to pick up on that, Elizabeth, you recently did a presentation at NAGIT, at the most recent NAGIT conference, called Don't Stay Silent, Vocal Health for Interpreters. And in that presentation, you highlighted your work with your colleague, Sarah Schneider. She's a doctor. Tell us about that.
Yes, Sarah Schneider is a wonderful professional, very, very generous, who has basically come with me across the whole state of California and elsewhere to really share this, bring this message to folks. Most interpreters are aware that their voice is very vital to the work that they do. And Sarah was able to support me with the science behind what we do, because although interpreters are very aware of some science, because they're interpreting all day long science, especially healthcare interpreters, they are not doctors, of course, and providers, and they must really work in their lane as those specialist applied linguists. Whereas Sarah really brings that depth to what it is that I want to do, that helps support the message that I instinctively know through my observations and my experience. And then we can work together to really bring home the science behind the message as well.
So there's a shout out to Sarah. Thank you for supporting our industry. And we'll certainly hope to have you here on Subject to Interpretation in the future. So let's get into this. So our voice is our instrument, right? Yet it remains the most overlooked and underappreciated tool that we possess. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think that that is a key word. I think we are all aware, okay, that our voice must function correctly for us to do our job. But something that we tend to look over is the fact that we're professional voice users. That's actually part of our job. So it's very difficult to be a spoken language interpreter if your voice is dysfunctional, if you're having problems with your voice, if there's some sort of issue with your voice that will circulate, come and go. These are things that we must take seriously. Unfortunately, we tend to really focus as interpreters on acquiring skills to interpret. Do I have vocabulary? Do I have field knowledge? Do I have extra linguistic knowledge? Can I apply good note-taking skills? What's my training, my background? But we tend to forget. And it is actually a problem that we see in other professions as well. So we're not alone in this. It's, if we speak to teachers, many teachers who use their voices professionally are also overlooked as professional voice users. And yet, frankly, they're doing presentations all day long in front of the classroom all day long above a lot of cacophony of sound. And so it's something that is we're not alone with, but it is something that for some reason in our field we have paid attention to, but perhaps really need to pay more attention to.
Now, recently you've become interested in adding to your field of knowledge. In other words, voice does not work in a vacuum, particularly for interpreters. And so you've begun to expand into the field of, or into the subject of, hearing health as well.
Yes, that's right. So, you know, human beings are a puzzle so far as every piece needs to work together in order for our health to work very well. And our brains are extraordinary in that our brains really control our health to for the most part. We hear from our brains, so we don't really hear from our ears per se. It's just the mechanics, but we really hear with our brains. And our brains also are in control of the functions of our organs. And so this is why we can't really separate one piece from another. And most healthcare interpreters or medical interpreters understand the complexity of the body and the systems and how they link and interrelate. And really, we can't look at it as an isolated, we can't look at vocal health as isolated from the rest of our bodies. And in actual fact, that's been part of the reason why we interpreters can suffer some problems in these areas, is because they tend to sort of put their voice or their hearing as on sort of a shelf out there somewhere, and separate them, and separate them from each other, but separate them from the rest of their health.
So what sparked your interest in researching more about vocal health and this intersection with hearing?
So what sparked my interest is the fact that I have been very lucky to work with a range of colleagues in both on the East Coast and West Coast, and some very experienced colleagues, some novice interpreters, a real range. And what I saw in common across the country was that injuries had absolutely nothing to do with the caliber, the training, the experience of the interpreter. So what would happen is there would be a highly seasoned interpreter that would have a throat hemorrhage, or there would be other injuries like hairline fractures of the feet from walking around hospitals all day long. There was also hearing loss, many other injuries I've seen. And this was actually before the pandemic. But then following the pandemic, with the rise in the remote modalities, I did see an increase in some of these injuries, and it worried me. And sometimes I feel like I have equal appreciation and care for the craft of interpreting as I do for those that perform that craft. And often interpreters tend to be very hardworking and do not tend to think of themselves as first in any means in any of the work that they do, so far as their health. So they will push themselves. And, you know, to the point of injuries, or to the point of, let's say, overlooking signs, red flags, and then they find themselves with an injury. And then, because not all interpreters are remunerated the same across the country, this injury they might suffer could have quite a terrible impact on them financially, and also with their quality of life. Once you lose certain frequencies of your hearing, you lose it, and that's going to affect you in your personal life, not just in your workplace. So I have a deep love, I guess, for people that work in this industry, if we want to call it that, and a deep respect. And you know, I see it as a way in which that maybe we can start to think about how we can take care of those people performing such important work for our patients and families and others that are really depending on us.
Well, I think you hit on a point a little bit earlier, which is that we think of ourselves as linguistic or language professionals, but we don't often think of ourselves as voice professionals or even hearing professionals, which are really the two other tools that we use on a daily basis, you know, hearing and speaking, and, you know, are, you know, the bookends to interpreting, which happens in the brain. So let's talk a little bit about something, you know, that I've never heard anyone talk about, which is OSHA, and that's the Occupational Safety and Health Administration of the United States. They are the ones that set the guidelines for what is safe in a workplace, what is not safe in a workplace, if you have to have a hard hat, if you have to wear goggles, you know, with the levels of any type of gas may or may not be radiation, et cetera, exposure. I've heard you talk a little bit about this, and I'd like you to expand on it.
It's a part of this discussion that tends to sometimes frustrate a little bit, because OSHA has no workplace guidelines for healthy vocal loads for any industry. They have workplace guidelines for exposure to sound. And it's a very simple guideline that often is more relevant to individuals that are working in, say, construction or with machinery in factories and in other places, maybe in fields where there might be clearly excessive noise from machines and other items. And that is quite different to the work that interpreters do. However, there is something there that does impact us, and that is that their threshold of 85 decibels as a time-weighted average, which means that in a certain period of a day across a certain period of a couple of weeks, if investigations are done over thresholds, if you're averaging 85 decibels through that period, then that workplace might qualify for a program that they will do, where they will have to come in and supervise, make sure there's changes made, and the employers, adhere to programs which will include hearing tests and many other adjustments. Interpreters don't qualify for that for the most part, because we're not exposed to that level of decibels on an average day. But what we will often find is that we're exposed to spikes in sound pressure levels, which causes us to go way above that 85 decibel levels. And for those of you that are trying to sort of gauge, well, how loud really is that 85 decibels? Because decibels are just the same as Fahrenheit temperature, in the sense that it's quite precise. Unfortunately, we tend to have a very subjective view of noise and loud sounds. But in actual fact, it's very precise. It's not subjective at all. And it's often what leads us to injuries as well, because we perceive sound as perhaps being more quiet than what it really is. So 85 decibels, if you imagine on a 737 sitting in the cabin taking off, it might measure around 85 decibels, and that's, 87 decibels, and that's inside a cabin. So that's very loud, right? If anybody has traveled on a plane, they would know that often when they're trying to hold conversation upon takeoff, it's hard to hear each other well. We don't average that all day long at work. So what happens with our remote modalities when we're wearing headsets or when we have speakers close to us, we may have hygiene issues on the part of those folks that are speaking to us, where they're going to make drop things or bump things, scrape things, make loud vocal sounds, whether it's children or other bits and pieces in that room. It's a very dynamic environment, especially in healthcare, and we're going to go well over that. And it's those sudden bursts of sound pressure levels that cause what's called acoustic shock or acoustic trauma, and then that can lead us to hearing loss, certainly injuries, and certainly permanent hearing loss. So that's where that OSHA rule falls short for so many of us, and it does not capture so many workers out there. And I did have a question posed to me that I thought was a very good question by somebody that works in leadership in a healthcare system. They did ask, there are plenty of people in healthcare using phones to communicate with patients, and they don't all have acoustic trauma. Why is that? Well, because interpreters are going into very dynamic rooms. They're actually in patient care rooms. And in patient care rooms, anything can happen. We have infusion alarms going off. other folks that might be in other rooms making so much noise. There are a bunch of noises and other things going on that's very dynamic. So it's a very different environment. We're not calling somebody to change an appointment in all cases all the time, where it's a very calm conversation that might have minimal background noise. Often than not, when you're a healthcare interpreter, you might be going into any kind of situation. So it's quite different. It's a dynamic environment. So yeah, that's the OSHA limitations. And certainly when it comes to vocal loads, there is nothing at all. They have hinted in articles, in occupational health articles in the past. I think one was from about 2007, where they had recognised that there is a need for research in healthy vocal loads. But I know that research is being done, but clearly it's not moving as fast as I certainly would like it to move.
Now, what about the idea of interpreter fatigue? We hear about that all the time. What kinds of fatigues are associated with both hearing and voice health?
Well, there's listening effort and listening fatigue. And for those of us that work as interpreters, we might have heard that before. We tend to associate that more with sometimes with the sort of complex passages we're interpreting and the length of the encounter, which is true, absolutely true, that exists. But there's also, you know, the kind of listening effort and fatigue that that comes from listening through sound that is not very hygienic, sound that is what we often term as dirty sound, sound that has a lot of screeches and pops and clicks and differences in volume and glitchy and just a whole bunch of sound that is just not easy to listen through. It requires so much effort and concentration that your fatigue kicks in a lot earlier than, say, if you were in person interpreting. However, both are true. You know, both would happen. You know, whether you're in person or whether you're working remotely, you're going to become fatigued. So there is this effort. And what happens with that is interpreters would have hopefully also heard of the cognitive load. We think of cognitive load as associated with, again, complex passages, long passages, exhausting our brain, because what happens is we're so busy trying to really concentrate on multiple things, like what's being said, how it's being said, do I understand the term, the meaning, can I do the reformulation accurately? There's so much going on, so many layers, that our brains become fatigued, and then we're sort of white knuckling at that point when it's triggered by many things, like, you know, so many things that can happen in an encounter. However, when you also have the added complexities of, you know, hearing issues and many other things like vocal fatigue, you then can be easily, your cognitive load can become overtaxed and triggered. And then at that point, you're not only struggling to keep up with the encounter because of just the complexity, the length, the effort, but also your brain at that point has no space left to be able to take care of you. You're not going to be thinking about many things like, you know, how's my voice doing? Am I hearing well? What's the actual problem with my hearing? You're more just razor focused on trying to, you know, stay afloat and white knuckling to get through that encounter. So yeah, there's many, many items. They're all connected. It's not just a case of cognitive load and needs to be addressed for accuracy. It needs to be addressed for our health.
And what practical tips would you recommend for preventing and managing it on the spot? Now, I just want to, I know you're a medical interpreter and, you know, the dynamics of medical interpreting are vast, But also, you know, interpreters who are in educational settings and in legal settings also encounter various different types of dynamics. A lot of people sometimes think that, you know, courtrooms are all hush hush and everything else, but that's not necessarily the case. There's people coming in and out, doors slamming, all kinds of different things that are happening at any one time. A lot of busy people trying to, you know, get a move on their agenda. So what kind of practical tips would you recommend on both of these ends, the hearing and the voice? Right.
So you are absolutely correct. And in fact, when we've taken these presentations to many interpreters, you know, they work in multiple fields. A lot of the interpreters, they don't all work in medical interpreting, but the symptoms and the injuries are the same. The reasons behind them might be slightly different. So in a courtroom, as you mentioned, an interpreter might have to throw their voice, maybe getting maybe the speed, the constant speed. There's so many possible, you know, reasons for why they might be developing the symptoms. But the symptoms, whether the interpreter works in education or healthcare or the courts, the symptoms and the injuries are very similar. So the tips would be the same. They apply to all of these interpreters. And they are that if you're working either remotely via video, whether it is in the criminal justice system or whether it is in healthcare or any other industry, you have to really focus on the standards of practice first and the codes of ethics in your fields, because there are a lot of, let's say, there are a lot of opportunities to really interpret those in a broad way. So one little way was like, you know, interpreter must advise whomever upon fatigue or upon inability to complete job. There's a lot of ways and avenues in different codes of ethics. And in fact, we did draw some correlations at Narjet about that, where you can use these, that they're there, where you can use these to really interpret them so far as your vocal and hearing health as well. So not everything is just built on, you know, accuracy, completeness, fidelity, all these aspects. So tips would be, the ones that we focus on would be thinking on your breathing. How are you breathing? Where are you breathing from? Keeping your voice forward in your mouth. And Sarah talks a lot about that. And some accents are a little bit more prone to that. I have an Australian accent. Australian accents are not forward in their mouth like an American accent is. So we have to really look at that. So the only person that's really going to address your individual habits and to optimize how you're using your voice is really a speech language pathologist. That's why we always encourage these professional voice users to go and have a session so that they can actually really pinpoint those very specific nuances that are for you, you know. Where are you resonating your sound from? Teaching you how to keep that voice forward, teaching you where to get your power and your strength from, projection of your voice. These things are very important. Also, teaching you how to become self-aware of volume. This is when you're in person. Positioning yourself, where are you positioned? What are the options for you? What's going to rebound sound? What's going to help you keep sound, muffled sound that you need muffled? Where should you position yourself? What's safe so far as your physical health, depending on the populations you're interpreting for? There is all these dynamics that you need to think about. And we run through them in detail in our discussions that we have with interpreters. And a simple one may be, don't stand next to glass. You know, it just bounces sound around. Stand near, you know, walls or curtains. Try to see if you can negotiate where you're having that discussion. You know, can that discussion be moved? Asking for what you need is very different to being IT help or IT support or a removalist, it's just we don't tend to sort of think about that and set the stage. So we need to set the stage. We have to understand, do a head to toe of ourselves. How are we feeling? This is a human performing this task. We all have lives outside of work. We might be more tired that day. We keep ourselves hydrated today for tomorrow. So if you didn't hydrate yourself today, it's likely that tomorrow you're not going to be optimized with your vocal folds. So there's so many things to consider and so many options and ways in which you can really adjust so that you preserve and your vocal health. Same with your hearing, they go together. So just like you don't want to be standing next to glass because you need to be able to project your voice, be heard, you also want to do that because you can't hear well when sound's bouncing around everywhere, especially if you're using headsets, everything's at the same level. So it becomes quite complicated. You want to be able to use sound limiting headphones so that you can have sound compressed so you're not going to get those spikes. You want to correct behaviors that you can by really leaning on those standards of practice and ethics when you're in those remote encounters. So you can manage that flow. You can also look at your environment at home. Make sure that you're optimizing all acoustics. Every decision has to be made quite purposeful so far as the equipment that you're using, the placement. You have to think of sound as 360 everywhere. Floors, walls, ceilings. There is a lot to consider, but it's worth it. It's kind of like a minor, surgery prep. You sort of really have to sort of look at every component. But you just have to remember, you're a human being. You're not a machine. How you perform today, so far as your how long you can talk well for, how long you can listen well for. It's not precisely going to be the same every day. So you just have to become self-aware. And the best part is to have those strategies in place so that it may not be natural for you to think of your health in this way, but to have those little techniques, as you're walking to an encounter, as you're driving into an encounter, simple head-to-toe check, making accommodations before you start interpreting. Addressing things straight up. I have spoken to interpreters that have had 30 years experience and they will push through simple things like a television that's making a small rumbling noise. They'll talk over it. They'll push through until such time that, well, then another noise starts to happen and then you have this cacophony, and they'll only stop and address it when someone just can't now hear them speak and they're really starting to verge on shouting and drawing their power from their throat and where they're just going to get extremely fatigued having to listen to all of this, so there's so many techniques.
Those are wonderful mitigation techniques, and I really appreciate that you have gone so in depth to that. And I know that, for example, and you've mentioned earlier, and Sarah as well, that you have recommended and modeled some types of exercises or practices for interpreters to incorporate into their routines for voice modulation, for, I guess, a vocal warm-up. But what about hearing? Is there anything for hearing? Normally, hearing is like an on or off. The closest thing I can say is I like to listen to brown noise, and that's kind of a nice soothing. But is there anything that would be helpful to, I guess, resetting hearing health?
Yes. One thing I forgot to mention, which is very important, is preventative care as well. So we talked about, so I'm going to answer your question as well, but I just don't want to miss out on this one thing. We did talk about having a session with a speech and language pathologist. Part of that is also preventative health, right? Just to make sure that you are well educated on yourself, develop self-awareness, and develop good habits for yourself. The same goes with your hearing health, having routine hearing tests, just to be sure, especially if you're an interpreter that does work in the remote modalities, that you're taking care of your hearing health as well. So measures, repeat your question. I'm sorry, repeat your question again. So measures, you said that you listen to brown sound.
Yes, just measures that you can use to reset your hearing health, that would be similar to those you would use to reset vocal health.
So we have, they're both the same, they're interrelated. So vocal health and hearing health, we will do recovery breaks. Recovery breaks are very different to standard breaks that you would have in your workplace. That's your lunch break or any other breaks that are by law available to you to take. You must take those breaks. We as interpreters feel that that's fine. I'm fine. I can just push through. I'm fine. There's no problem. I don't feel anything. But breaks are to avoid you accumulating fatigue, right? So firstly, I want to say, please take your standard breaks. But secondly, there is the idea of vocal resets and recovery breaks. They're for you after sessions that may have been sessions that might have tired you in that moment, that you felt the fatigue in that moment, whether it's listening fatigue because, and this has nothing to do with long sessions. We're just talking about sessions, period, whether they're long, short, whatever session might have caused you fatigue. And sometimes it could be a short session that might be 10 minutes, but it might be one of the most hardest 10 minutes you've had to do for, you know, a month. And it's because you have multiple challenges in that moment. Take your breaks because fatigue, whether it's vocal fatigue, listening fatigue, is accumulative. That will tire you in that moment, but that just adds. It's like pouring water in a bucket. You know, you pour a glass of water in, you've got that little amount less now of space, and then you do something else, another three glasses of water goes in. Now you have less space. It's just a really simple, silly analogy just to say, you know, it's accumulative. And this isn't something that, I could just keep going. And no, fatigue is fatigue, and it happens for various reasons. So resets, we do have some recommended exercises for vocal resets. It's to remind yourself to have your sound forward in the mouth. And with hearing health, you have to reset your brain because we hear from our brain. So what you need to do is take brain breaks. I call them brain breaks for your hearing. And that means that if you had a challenging session where your cognitive load might have been triggered, that's a clear-cut sign. You really need to take a brain break for that moment and really regroup. And it's not just for the safety of the patient or for the accuracy in what you're doing. It's for your health.
Thank you. That's a great answer. I love hearing that one hears from the brain. That's normally you're thinking, you know, you hear from the ears, and if you don't hear, if you're, you know, they're either on or off.
Right. So the ear is the door in which sound goes through, signals, you know, but the brain is where the processing happens and where we actually decode all of these signals that come through this door. So your brain is absolutely essential in being able to hear, understand, reformulate, all of those things. We can have hearing loss that's got nothing to do with our actual structures of the ear, like our, you know, all of the structures. I'm not going to go through the anatomy because that's not very exciting, but all of the structures of the brain. We can have hearing loss that is a processing hearing loss of the brain. So it's quite complex, and I'm not a doctor. I'm not an expert in this, but I am a user of my brain and my ears like everyone else is, right? So we have to understand the science to the point where we recognize the importance. We don't have to be specialists in all of these areas, but we have to be a specialist in self-awareness and our own care. And so hearing from the brain is by no means anything new, but it's something that we just need to learn to respect a little bit more so that we have longevity and health, you know, in our private lives, and we have longevity in our careers.
It's really important, I just think, you know, for interpreters to really hone in on that, because we focus on all of the extraneous noise that our ears are hearing, but we never associate them with the extraneous noise that our brains are trying to work their way through and around.
Yeah, and so that's why what I like to try to do is to get interpreters to just forget for a moment of this door that we have here and just really focus on your brain. Because yeah, we don't think about it. We think of every time we hear sound, we just think of it just coming through our ear here. And there's just so much that's happening in our brain to be able to decode all of these signals that are coming in. That it can be, that's where we get our listening fatigue. This is not, I've in my journey, I've had discussions with sign language interpreters as well, because I thought perhaps they might be able to enlighten me more about hearing and the process of communication, and how and whether or not they, as professionals, are aware of the relationships. Because they're working with hearing impaired people all the time. But even discussions with some very excellent sign language interpreters, they didn't have a strong connection with their understanding about the brain and with hearing. And so it's something that, once again, I think that so much education is out there with so many aspects of interpreting skills in so many areas. But sometimes, as I said, we're not just thinking as much in depth about these aspects to do with an important aspect on how we can do our job well, how we can be professionals and go the distance, really.
Absolutely. So let's focus on vocal health for a moment, since that is the most obvious aspect of interpreter performance. You know, when an interpreter, their voice starts to crack or they start to cough in the middle of an encounter, then, you know, that definitely is going to put a hamper on going that distance then you mentioned. Can you differentiate between regular voice strain and potential vocal damage and signs that we might be that we should look for?
Yes. So vocal, every time we have a sore throat, every time we have effortful talking, like every time we hear changes of quality in our tones, in our volume, all of these things are red flags for indications that there's an injury there. Now, especially so if it's happening outside of an acute setting of an illness. So if we're not sick with a regular virus of some sort, and we're having any kind of changes to our voice at all, whether it's volume, we sound strained, as I'm saying, we are feeling like there's a lump in our throat. All of these things are indications of injuries. And symptoms like these, we often think of them as, oh, I've just been speaking for a long time, it'll go away. Maybe so, but that's an indication of an injury. So we have to start changing how we perceive these symptoms instead of downplaying them like that. We need to understand that's actually an injury to start off with. And some of these injuries can be permanent and some of them can be temporary. But it's not something that we should just ignore and keep pushing through. And I know it's hard sometimes because an injury can happen in the middle of our day, in the middle of a session. And I understand that we do not, it's, we do not all have the option of just going, oh, I am starting to get a sore throat. I'm going to stop here. Which is why what we need to do is apply all of these other strategies to prevent that from happening. So if you're breathing correctly, if you have correct technique, your voice is forward in your mouth, and you're using your resonant your resonating cavities, to project, you are likely not to come across that, because it is possible to talk for a long time without injuring yourself. But those are red flags.
And you've mentioned a few times hydration, and we know that it plays a crucial role, not just in vocal health, but in general health. But what are the best practices for interpreters?
So hydration, what we forget about hydration, we all know that we must drink water. It's so good for us. You know, it helps our bodies. Everybody knows this, but what we kind of forget is just how impactful it is to our vocal folds. It makes our vocal folds very pliable. It also helps your brain because your brain is making the decisions so far as how to take care of your organs. So you need your drinking today for tomorrow. So hydration is, it can be systemic, right? Where you're drinking water and you're hydrating all day, or it could be sort of external. So you're having, you know, for example, desk humidifiers. Your eyes are going to thank you for that as well. So desk humidifiers and other ways of ensuring that your environmental humidity is good. All of these things are very helpful. And it is something that we overlook so far. It's how it can impact our vocal health and our hearing health. We do need to do it. My tips would be for that is we don't flood our systems. If we drink a lot in one hit, it tends to sort of flood our systems, and then it only makes us have to use the bathroom. So a lot of it doesn't stay. So we need to sort of small sips regularly through the day and as often as you can so that you can keep yourself hydrated. But remember, the benefits of drinking that day will help to some part that day, but it's really to keep your system hydrated longer. And folks that might have digestive issues or other issues will know that the moment that they fall off the wagon and they don't drink much today, any fluids, or they will feel it that day and the next day. Yeah.
Now, it was recently recommended to me that having a saline spray and using that interspersed throughout the day, if you have a long day of interpretation, would be a good idea. Do you share that?
So there are benefits in using a saline spray to keep your nasal passages moisturized so that it avoids having post-nasal drip. It helps with loosening things up so you can get excess mucus out, but it doesn't do anything to your vocal folds. What we breathe in all goes past our vocal folds. So if we're breathing in any irritants, everything will go past our vocal folds. But what we're spraying just in our nasal passages won't really directly have as much impact. I would also argue that something like that would need to be done regularly for maintenance to keep the level of postnasal drip and other things minimized. And I would also look at my consideration for that would be that you would really need to speak to a medical professional because there could be many other things going on that's causing that. So that is not something that I would say would be extremely beneficial just to do on that day when you're interpreting a lot. It'd be something that you should do sort of more frequently to get the better benefits out of that.
Well, interestingly, to put a little more context, this was recommended by a medical professional in this field, but it was directly related to what you mentioned, which was the post-nasal drip. So a lot of times people have reflux, acid reflux, esophageal, GERD, and they don't even know that they have it. They think it might be something else, seasonal allergies. And as you described, everything, flows through nasal passages down by the vocal folds and can be a source of an irritant. So that is even more reason, right, for an interpreter who's having, some of these symptoms that they can't explain to perhaps visit a medical professional?
Absolutely, because saline nose sprays are great. They moisturize your nasal passages. It's great. But if you are having postnasal drip, it's going to be good for that, but you can't expect that you have chronic postnasal drip and then you use it on that day that you're interpreting and then miraculously everything's great and it fixes. These are things that really need to be managed by a medical provider so that they can really guide that person with whatever else might be going on, because people can develop chronic rhinitis, people can develop a whole bunch of sort of chronic issues that require sort of more longer complete plans of care. You're right, part of life factors that can affect our vocal health is reflex GERD, silent reflux, which is something that you may not have heartburn with, but yet you are having regurgitation at night without an instant sense of heartburn. So it could be happening. And what happens is, of course, that ends up going up the esophagus and can end up causing things like vocal fold nodules, because you're pushing through all day long to try to get that clear sound, which is hard with some of the sort of lining of your esophagus being irritated and things like that. So these are things that are absolutely impactful. We talk a lot about behaviors and life factors in the discussions that we've had with interpreters, and stress, you know, and many other things. These are all part of it. And of course, these are things that are affect your overall health as well. But remember, your voice is not disconnected from all of those overall health issues. So yeah, there's use related injuries, poor use of your voice, and then there's life factors as well. We also need to consider things like medications and other chronic conditions that we might have. I was actually quite, through my research with both Pyle, who I worked with, Anand, who's another wonderful professional, as well as Sarah, we learned. I was quite surprised. Of course, they weren't, but I was quite surprised to the level of how many diseases and medications can actually impact your voice or your hearing, and we're just not aware of it because we're prescribed a medication, and we know the main side effects. We're explained often than not what the main side effects are. But we may not know that on rare occasions it may also impact your voice or impact your hearing. You know, there's nerves. Our nervous system is very complex, and things like diabetes can affect some of our nerves for our hearing as well. So there's all these things that we, not always on the top of the list, but we should be aware of the full all the possibilities, we just should be aware of, because sometimes as interpreters we play down some of these symptoms, as I was saying, due to, oh, I must just have a virus, or may I just spoke for too long, but we haven't taken into consideration all these other life factors that may be actually contributing to some of these symptoms.
Well, I appreciate you raising awareness to that. And you mentioned earlier breathing techniques. Can we talk a little bit about how those can help our vocal health?
So breathing is important. Sarah often talks a lot about how we need to breathe correctly in order for us to draw our power from the right place. But we also, so what that means is, and what I share as well in my discussions often, is we sometimes in some of our encounters, there's a lot of speed talking that's done, and that's not relevant to the context. So for example, it's just a speaker that just speaks fast. It's a speaker that might be in a rush. And so as interpreters, often there's this, we feel sort of compelled to speak fast and keep up. We feel maybe pressured that this person that we're interpreting for might just not be patient with us if we're not getting our words out as quickly. Often what happens is that we're so focused on that task at hand and all the other things that we need to be focused on that we're not breathing right. We're breathing to the point where we run out of air, and then our voice goes to the back of our throat like this, and we have like this this odd sounding voice that happens at the end of that, and we just keep going. We're just not aware that that's actually, we're not even aware that that's what tends to happen at the end of each sentence. So becoming aware and really getting that speech pathology consult in, so that they can actually do an assessment of the quality of your voice and what you're doing. And it's habitual as well. So breathing, ensuring that you are breathing correctly, taking a breath in from your diaphragm, not pushing from the throat, resonating from your mouth, your voice forward in your mouth. There's exercises that we do on our way into an encounter where we can hum and make sure that we're feeling that tingle on our lips, that tingle on our nose. And we'll provide handouts as well, so people kind of understand what we mean by that. But there are these exercises that we can do to sort of ensure that we have both our breathing and our voice positioned correctly. We kind of need both. So yeah, breathing is something that we tend to play down. Like, of course, I know how to breathe. I'm breathing right now. but it's drawing your power from there, because often when our brains are so occupied on the reformulation of the messages, it's not habitual. But before we walk into a room, if we take that breath from the bottom, we kind of set ourselves and set our breathings, and it sort of refocuses us. Also, breathing correctly has a centering effect on our concentration. So it's actually good for many, many things.
So throughout this conversation, you've mentioned baseline of, doing a baseline on hearing, doing a baseline with a speech pathologist. And I've heard in other scenarios that you have also recommended doing a baseline with a laryngologist. There we go.
Right. Yes. Baseline, part of preventative care, because you are a professional voice user and you are also listening professionally as well. You have to listen to the other important factor about interpreters, what makes us different with that, is that we don't have the luxury of listening to just what we want to listen to. So we need to listen to every single word that's been uttered to enable us to really draw the correct meaning and reformulate correctly. So our listening is very heightened. It's very focused. So because of that, yes, we need to do preventative care. Part of it is seeing a laryngologist so that they could do a video stroboscopy. And just doing a scope in our nose or down our throat does not really look at the movement of the vocal fold. And that's what we want to see with a video stroboscopy, and that's why we see a laryngologist. These specialists can, and I know healthcare interpreters will know what I'm talking about, but they will run a series of exercises that you will have to do where you make certain sounds that have the vocal folds moving in certain ways. And when they do that, they can see what sort of movements and what's happening there. They get a very good picture. They can see if there's any nodules, polyps, cysts. They can see if there's any, if part of your vocal folds or structures are kind of semi-paralyzed. How are you making sound? And it explains the quality of the sound, and it will hopefully explain most of the symptoms, because they get a picture of not only the structures but how the structures are moving. So this is a wonderful thing to do for people that use their voices professionally like we do.
Now, you haven't just been sharing this with interpreters. You've actually been sharing this with instructors of interpreters.
Right.
And that's obviously, key importance. If we train the new generation of interpreters to value their tools, essentially their instruments, as would let's say a violinist who has to make sure their instrument is in tune and that it's functioning properly before they go on stage, then we're obviously going to prevent a lot of mishaps and a lot of injuries, right?
Absolutely. And when I started working on this, I realized that I had to convince everyone. It's not just the interpreters. I have to convince leaders, managers, trainers, and I have to convince them that this is worth looking at. And it doesn't take much, but it does so far as that, but it does take a lot so far as reaching everybody. So yeah, that was my plan. I thought just as I saw highly educated, experienced, wonderful interpreters not doing, you know, basic hearing tests or just downplaying, you know, I worked all day and now my ears are buzzing. Ah, well, tomorrow they'll be fine. And no, that's dangerous. You might end up losing hearing. Please don't do that. Go and get that checked out. So I had a lot of work to do. I realized this because this is something that the only way we're going to create some sort of change and really respecting, you know, the interpreter, they are their own instrument, you know, so their voice, their hearing, their physical health matters on top of all their other skills that they have to have. So I presented for the National Council as well for the Trainer of Trainers series on this so that I could help some of these trainers start to incorporate this as you're going to train folks how to be interpreters. Remember, they're professional voice users as well. So we have to consider all of this. So that was really great. You know, we have scripts that we're able to share with some of these trainers and with the interpreters. Everybody seems to require actually the same information, of course, just presented differently because everyone has different sort of goals and focuses. But we did that. I've been able to present it as well to leaders. So, for example, I've presented it to Kaiser with some of their interpreters and their leader there. Of course, in my workplace now and through these conferences, it's not a natural, I guess it's not a logical sort of natural state of folks that work in our industry to think of ourselves as our instrument to professionally do our job. But we have made some good crossroads. I think we've really bridged some of this knowledge, and it's something that has to be done again and again. It's not something that's a one and done deal, unfortunately, because if I can manage to convince one trainer to incorporate this as part of their training program in a very serious way with the professionals that can, not with interpreters teaching us or trainers that are not, you know, speech language pathologists or hearing experts. We need to bring in these experts because the science is there. You know, we just have to bring it to those of us that it's going to impact the most.
Now, throughout my conversations with different interpreters over time, many have brought up the subject of insurance. Some of them focus on the idea that an interpreter should have an E&O insurance. Some have, you know, obviously there's always the debate over, you know, proper health insurance and healthcare for interpreters. But you advocate for disability insurance. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Firstly, I'd like to say that I'm not an expert on insurance, but my goal is to provide as many tools possible for trainers, leaders, interpreters to enable interpreters to be taken care of and for interpreters to learn how to take care of themselves as well. And just as we have other professionals in the field ensure that they have disability insurance because they work in a field that if they are harmed, if their body's harmed in any way, they would not be able to work in that specific field again. We're no different. We use our voices and our hearing professionally. And we really need to consider how we might protect ourselves because we would lose our livelihood. We may not be able to work in that field anymore for many reasons, obviously, and because we have a life outside of work that we would like to participate fully in, I'm sure. So disability insurance is an easy one, I guess, that I can mention to many folks that come to these discussions so that they can just start thinking a little broadly about how they may want to take care of themselves. Because if something should happen, and it has happened to some interpreters where they develop a sudden illness that is impeding their ability to carry out their job, or if they've hurt themselves at work and they've now lost some frequencies in their hearing, which has happened, you know, it could be so much so that it makes their job just too difficult. Once you lose some of those frequencies in your hearing, frequencies are related to certain speech sounds that we make. And so what ends up happening is you might be able to hear a full sentence, but then suddenly you're finding that certain words, you're not hearing that well anymore, or you're not really recognizing the word, but you're recognizing that what suddenly is happening is that you're just not always catching every word that's said. And you've caught every other word of that sentence quite clearly, but then there's some words in that sentence you've just not heard well, and that's because you're starting to lose some of those frequencies which are linked to certain speech sounds. So this is why I think that we need to protect ourselves a little bit. And if you're a freelancer, I know that it causes hardship to incorporate all of these costs into your running your business. But I do think it's something you're worth it. You should, you know, as the saying goes, you're worth it. So you should just investigate at least. Investigate.
Now, in your effort to bring awareness to hearing and voice care, you've also provided resources and references in your presentations. And I believe you've actually published some scripts that are meant to reduce the stress on the interpreter in how to find the right wording when interjecting for purposes of, you know, not being able to hear people speaking too quickly, accuracy, and all of these things, which can be adapted for health, for self-care, which is, you know, the underlying goal
right
here.
Yes.
Tell us
yes.
about that.
Yes, that's right. So what I've done is interpreters are a great communicators for the most part. These scripts are designed to deal with very common problems that we might come across as interpreters, pitfalls that may affect our hearing or vocal health. And they're very common problems. But what I'm noticing is that we may, across a long period of time, we may develop ways in which we might approach a particular common problem that happens in an encounter. However, what ends up happening sometimes with us is that we're not addressing it as succinctly and directly and politely as perhaps we could be. So I provided just some scripts as a launching pad, really, for interpreters out there that work in all sorts of different fields to adapt. Really, the point of it is just to encourage people to write a little script down, a little sentence that may address something that you find that happens all the time to you in your workplace that may help avoid you injuring yourself in any way, keeps you safe. And also, say you work in healthcare, will keep patients safe because you can't interpret accurately what you can't hear. And so these are really important things. We've also provided, as you said, these resources. They're all launching pads, really, for working professionals out there to start on their own journey. It's really an encouragement for them to start a journey of self-awareness, of your hearing, of your voice, and to really read up. You know, read up on the science, read up. It's there. There's some wonderful, reputable resources there. And consider writing those scripts. Interestingly enough, it was the trainers that really appreciated those because the comments and the feedback that I got was that it helped them establish a sort of baseline standard for sort of how you might approach some of these problems. But it's individual, like we all work across different industries. But, you know, injuries are injuries, whether you work, you know, in the criminal justice system or you work in healthcare or you work in education or whichever field you work in, injuries are injuries. And you know well those sorts of challenges that you might have. So these groups are good for leaning and interpreting those standards of practice and those ethics in your field and taking advantage of them as well for wellness for yourself.
And Elizabeth, you've really made a dent into this little, not known, but little appreciated area of interpreting, which includes hearing health and voice health. Is there anything else that we're missing that you're looking to add to this?
There are lots of areas that I'm really interested in. One of the immediate areas that I think that might be my next little project will be interpreting and translating ergonomics, because I've found that there have been a lot of physical injuries outside of our voice and our hearing. There's been folks that have had hairline fractures and plantar fasciitis and, you know, a bunch of spine issues. There's a lot of walking on hard concrete floors for a lot of healthcare interpreters, especially those that work in hospitals. Some hospitals have very large buildings, a lot of walking, a lot of standing. Often, you know, the interpreter is not always the one that gets to sit down all day long. So there is that. But then there's the flip side, you know, those interpreters that are sitting down all day. So there's a lot of ergonomics that for those remote modality interpreters as well, that long term, they need to really think about. And of course, all of this is something that would apply to people that work in many different industries as well. So if you're walking a lot and standing a lot or in odd positions, you know, especially in some of our dynamic environments that we work in, these are going to be important things to look at. So that's something that I'm interested in exploring. And I have a few other things when I get the time, hopefully soon.
And I'm certain that, you know, phone interpreting has always existed, and VRS, and more recently VRI. But you know, with the advancement of technology, with the advancement of this remote provision of services, certainly we're looking at more issues like that, right?
Absolutely. I think that if there's anything that stayed after the pandemic was the provision of a lot of these remote modalities, there was an increase. And for many people, it's stayed. It hasn't gone back to what it was before. So this is something that, once again, ergonomics has been around for a very long time, but it is something that I feel as interpreters that need to be more and more nimble these days in their assignments and where they're going to work and how they're going to manage their assignments now that maybe expectations might have shifted a bit in how flexible interpreters are going to be. You know, it's important to arm interpreters with everything necessary to keep them functional, healthy, hopefully happy, you know, doing their important work. You know, they, as we said, they are their own instrument, and sitting down, taking calls, typing a lot, having to look at two screens, their eyes, you know, these are things that one of the comments, well, I heard a lot of interpreters, as well as myself, actually find that their eyesight after the pandemic got a lot worse. So there's a lot of changes. You know, it's just the weight of where the workload is now. For some of us, it's changed, and some interpreters are feeling it more than maybe what they did in the past. So it's always good, and it's always just something good that we can, whether or not it's happening to you or not. You know, I feel that interpreters and trainers, we really need to sort of shift the culture a little bit in understanding that or actually colleagues. We might be working in different parts of the country in different fields, but, you know, I may be working remotely and be taking a call for a certain institution, and then somebody in another state may take another call for that same institution. So we just want to be a little consistent with how we work, because if we want to be treated as professionals and we want the relevant remuneration and also standards, workplace conditions, then we need to be consistent in how we work as well.
Absolutely. So thank you for opening up that new can of worms.
Well, hopefully it'll be cans of worms with solutions.
Well, we look forward to hearing more about that. And Elizabeth, thank you so much for your time today. I'm so appreciative of your initiative and your willingness to share your expertise on, you know, hearing and vocal health and, you know, all things health for interpreters. Your insights are, they're definitely going to benefit our audience. So thank you so very much.
Thank you, Maria. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
And to our viewers and listeners, thank you so much for joining us here today. Don't forget to leave us your comments about this episode, about future episodes that you would like to see. And in general, email us at podcast@delamorainstitute.com. Thanks again, and never stop learning.